is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Global sell-off. Those are the headlines from Europe, from Asia, and from the United States. A phenomenon now engaging all the op-ed pages in all languages to explain. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Global sell-offs are a phenomenon of the interlocking markets. We've experienced so many of them, you begin to compare and contrast. There is one op-ed writer I admire, John Authors, who this morning compares 98, which was the Asian contagion crash, if you were all old enough to remember, with 07, which was the opening door of the Great Recession, if you all remember. Here we are in 24, and it's convenient for editorial pages to attach a global sell-off to some event. So the one that I see simultaneously is the event of the threats in the Middle East by Tehran, vowing revenge, and by Hezbollah from Beirut, vowing revenge against the State of Israel, still at war in Gaza, Hamas. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for joining. A global sell-off is routine. We can add up the trillions of dollars that are sloshing back and forth. And yet there is also the geopolitics of the moment. Is there a reason to believe these events are attached to each other? The economic downturn of the 1930s is often looked to as a predicate for the catastrophe of the Second War. I don't think we're at that scale. However, the conditions are similar at some point. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, no, there's not a direct connection, but everything is related. And the whole Middle East disruption and dislocation definitely follows a pattern within the United States, within Western Europe, between the great powers and the like. So in that sense, they're connected. But nobody should be surprised by this sell-off. The only thing we were waiting for was the specific date. You and I have talked for a long time about how we're moving from one global strategic cycle to the next. And we said, over the last few years, look, this is going to entail a period of economic collapse and reconstruction and the like. And it's going to happen probably, as we said, within the 20s and it's now happening. And there'll be quite a long period of reconstruction and redevelopment and the sorting out of who's going to be in power. Well, what we you say, is this a predicate to World War III? Frankly, I think we're already up to World War IV because World War III was the Cold War. It was an intense, total war in every respect except major confrontation between the great powers in military, conventional military terms or nuclear terms. Because of the nuclear threat, everybody wanted to fight the war by other means. And what we saw in the 21st century was Cold War II beginning, or World War III, as we're, you could argue we're now in, which is absolutely refined use of every means in a society's power to punish other societies. And the Chinese have been particularly on the offensive in this regard. And yes, the military plays a role in projecting power. The prestige of the state is about projecting power credibly. Iran is doing it with its armed forces, as rough as they are. But the reality is that the armed forces are things you project and you show to get prestige and coercive capability, but not necessarily to use. And the People's Republic of China feels exactly that way because you don't want to risk war, because war always has uncertain outcomes. Now, we are going to see further economic decline because, look, the stock market is just symptomatic. What you're looking at is fundamental reorganization of global markets as we move from one set of trusted supply chain elements to the next. And what that means is that because of the uncertainties, people or countries will basically revert to internal lines of supply where they can. And of course, most Western countries are not good at that because they abandoned self-reliance and competitiveness of their manufacturing and agricultural industries in favor of open markets. And unfortunately, the period for open markets is declining rapidly. So we're going to see a lot more economic decline of a far greater nature than the stock market collapse, although I don't think that has yet ended. But the stock market is not necessarily symptomatic of the economy at large, except for the fact that it's tied up the pension funds and investments of many, many individuals who are counting on it to be their safeguard for the future.
The Middle East, the headlines continue to warn of an imminent war. The State Department has issued remarks these last days, most notably Secretary of State Blinken saying on Saturday to Sunday, depending on where you are in the world, war within 24 to 48 hours, the Iranian attack on Israel. It is now, the clock is running down, and there is no evidence of a major attack. We have another version now that says the Hezbollah from Beirut, the north, will attack, and then Iran will attack. Russia, the U.S., France, Great Britain, all powers, to my knowledge, have urged their citizens to leave Lebanon by the fastest route out of the airport, as long as it's open. So there are all the conditions for a war start, not too dissimilar to what happened in February of 22 when Mr. Blinken, we all recall, said that the war is going to start in 24 to 48 hours. It hasn't started yet, but what kind of war, Gregory? Because we have headlines saying, not more than this, or somewhat less than that, or we must punish them, but we don't want a wider war. Both sides are saying this. So this begins to resemble, there was a science fiction episode of Star Trek once where the planet had solved the problem with war. They were letting a computer simultaneously pretend that there was a missile strike on a city and then generate how many casualties there were. And if you were a citizen of that city, you had to report to a destruction station because you were a casualty. It was war without bloodshed. It was war bureaucratically. That begins to remind me of what we're seeing now, war in the headlines.
Well, yes, because Russia is strenuously pushing Iran not to take offensive action. We saw that the Russians were going to provide the latest air defense systems to Iran. And note that that's a defensive system to offer some degree of protection to its ally, largely in the knowledge that the S-300 and S-400 Triumph series of air defense systems in Iran did not in any way deter Israel in the recent strikes, and the S-400 has proven to be now eclipsed. So they'll be deploying the S-500 Prometheus, which does have a much longer range, but it doesn't give Iran offensive capability, and Russia is anxious for Iran not to prosecute that offensively against Israel. But Iran has to do something to save face, otherwise the credibility of the clerics, the ruling clerics, has diminished so dramatically that they are in extreme danger from domestic overthrow. So they have to beat their chests and look strong. But they've already told Israel that they don't want an all-out war. Well, you know, don't threaten something if you can't follow through. But they, as with the recent attacks, mutual set of attacks between Israel and Iran, they are in negotiation to minimize that. But Iran does need to keep its corridor open through Iraq and Syria and potentially Lebanon to the Mediterranean. That's far more important to Iran than any support for Hamas, because Hamas is basically not part of the family. It's an ally, but not part of the family. So it's going to be interesting. I don't believe that Secretary Blinken actually understands the deep-seated motivations and survival needs of both Russia and Iran in this particular conflict.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to Bangladesh. I'm John Adams.